This week, Canada became the first G7 nation to legalize recreational marijuana, and they're only the second country in the world to do so, following Uruguay. On Wednesday, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who ran on a platform of legalization, was asked if he uses marijuana now that it's legal.
I've said many times that I'm not a drug user. I don't drink much alcohol. I don't drink coffee. I have no intention of using marijuana.
Trudeau says his intent with legalization is to keep profits out of the hands of organized crime and to keep cannabis away from kids. So will those things happen? And what impact will this have on the U.S.? Vanmala Subramaniam is a cannabis reporter for the Financial Post, and she joins me now from Toronto. Vanmala, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So that's a fantastic beat.
It's very interesting, actually.
Fantastic. Well, you're the expert here. Tell us what this means for recreational marijuana is now legal in Canada. What does that mean? Can I just go to a store and get some?
Yes. Okay. So essentially what it means is that you're allowed to possess up to 30 grams of cannabis. Anyone living in Canada is allowed to possess up to 30 grams of cannabis. It also means that you can just purchase cannabis freely in any kind of online retail store, or some brick and mortar stores that, you know, are licensed by the government. They only exist in some provinces so far. In Ontario, for instance, the only way you can actually purchase legal cannabis is through one store that is controlled by the government online. It's called the Ontario Cannabis Store. But over time, you're going to see a lot more retail shops pop up, which essentially means that, you know, if you're walking down the street in downtown Toronto, eventually, probably next spring, you'll be able to just walk into a store and buy some dried flower.
Now, we know, obviously, Canada is our northern neighbor. Will this have any impact on the border between Canada and the U.S.?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's been a lot of discussion about if you're working in the cannabis industry in Canada, are you going to be asked questions and stopped at the border when you get across? So the way in which the messaging has gone out from the U.S. side is quite interesting. So in the beginning, they said, you know, if you work in the industry, or if you have any kind of affiliation in this legal industry, even though you're crossing into a U.S. state where medical marijuana or rec is legal, you will not be able to get across the border, even if you're not carrying cannabis on you. So now, 2 weeks ago, the U.S. backtracked on that. And they said, actually, if you work in the marijuana industry in Canada, you will be able to get across the border as long as you're not going to the U.S. for work, which is very interesting and also very problematic, because there's a very strong business relationship that the U.S. has with Canada when it comes to weed. A lot of American companies, because, you know, weed is not federally legal there, are listed on Canadian stock exchanges, which means that there's just a very strong business relationship. There's a lot of capital, a lot of U.S. money flowing to the Canadian cannabis sector. And so there's bound to be travel between Canadians and Americans across the border for reasons of, you know, cannabis business. Recreational weed is legal in 9 states in the U.S. and D.C. So in many of these states, like California, Colorado, Oregon, Washington State, there are numerous businesses, retail businesses, you know, venture capitalists focused on investing in the marijuana industry. But the problem is, how do these businesses raise money, right? The only way they can raise money, because it's still quite a stigmatized drug, is if they can list on another stock exchange and they can go public. Essentially, you know, they can get an average investor to invest in them. So what a lot of these businesses have done, and it's quite significant. My last count was about, you know, 20 over American cannabis businesses are listed on the Canadian Securities Exchange, the CSE, which is now being dubbed the POT Index because of, you know, the number of cannabis companies listed on it. And so as a Canadian or an American, you can buy, you can invest in these companies in Canada, but you can't do that in the U.S. So that is the first, I guess, like, you know, most tangible, strongest relationship between the U.S. and Canada on cannabis.
Let's talk a little bit about the legalities of this and the criminality of marijuana and cannabis. I mean, we have this issue in the United States where there are some states that have it legal, as you mentioned, some do not. But we spoke to Akwasi Owosu-Bempah, an assistant professor at the University of Toronto and the director of research for the Campaign for Cannabis Amnesty. And he gave us some information about Canada's history of criminalization of this drug and also discrimination. Let's take a listen.
Canada was at the forefront of criminalizing many drugs with the Opium Act of 1908, and then following the U.S. with the criminalization of cannabis in 1923. And not only were we early to do so, but our drug laws were also quite racially motivated. And so our initial drug laws targeted our Asian as well as our Black populations. And we've seen that play out since then in the way in which those laws were enforced.
Vanmala, I'm curious, are there similar disparities today prior to this legalization in Canada?
Yeah, they are. Actually, Vice did a really good investigation last year about this, where they found out cannabis charges for pot possession were disproportionately amongst Black Canadians and Indigenous people in certain cities. And, you know, the fact of the matter is there's a big hypocrisy in the way in which the government has gone about legalization. And the reason why I say this is because there are examples of politicians, former DEA officials, actually former police officials, investing in the legal cannabis space. And there has been very little movement on the front to pardon people for very simple pot possession charges. Like, for instance, more than 500,000 Canadians have a criminal record for having pot on them. So having weed, so for possessing a small amount of weed.
Oh, Vanmala, I do want to ask you a question, though. There is some legislation that's attempting to change some of these convictions.
Yes, there is a movement building to expunge this. Justin Trudeau has said that it is his plan. However, a timeline hasn't been laid out. So I would just end by saying it is there, the conversation's there, a movement is building to expunge people, but it hasn't actually come into reality. It's a good thing that the movement's there, though.
Vanmala Subramaniam is a cannabis reporter for the Financial Post, and I spoke to her from Toronto. Thanks, Vanmala.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.